welcome back to Casual Climbers, the podcast by and for beginning hikers and those who may not quite be physically ready to tackle the Appalachian Trail. I'm your host, Donna Padrick, and alongside me is my husband and adventure buddy, Roy.
Hi.
Hi, Roy.
In today's podcast, we provide you with information, tips, and tricks on how to get into hiking in the Blue Ridge area. We will also cover some of the hundreds of trails in the various parks in the region, and maybe entertain you a little bit along the way. So we're two middle-aged, perhaps not in the very best shape.
Not in the best shape at all.
Hikers who love the outdoors and want to share our experiences with you. In this week's episode, we discuss quite easily the toughest hike we've done to date.
Oh, yeah.
Rainbow Falls Trail at Jones Gap State Park in South Carolina. We'll also have a fun fact segment about the 19th century road builder Solomon Jones by Donna.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we will highlight a very cute little local restaurant right near the park, F Mart.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you say, Donna? Let's get into it.
Let's go.
So here is Rainbow Falls Trail by the numbers. The distance is 4.31 miles from the trailhead there and back. The time it took us was 4 hours and 2 minutes at a, I don't want to say comfortable pace, because it was not a comfortable pace.
I mean, it was, I think, comfortable 3/4 of the way there.
I wouldn't even say 3/4 of the way. But of that, 2 hours and 7 minutes were moving time. So you can tell that we took twice as long doing the thing as a whole as we did actually moving.
Okay.
We took 4 hours to do the hike, but we only moved for 2 hours of it.
That's crazy.
That's how strenuous it was. We took a lot of breaks. Now, a lot of that was time spent at the waterfall itself.
I don't know about a lot of it.
And we were probably there at 20 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe at the waterfall. Yeah. The lowest point is 1,275 feet, and the highest point is 2,425 feet. So if you guys don't want to do the math, it is 1,150 feet of elevation change. And if you look at the picture of the trail map on our website under episode 13, you will see the elevation change. It basically looks like a mountain. It's a steady climb up and a steady descent down.
Yeah. Yeah.
The biggest thing about this hike, listeners, is that extremely sure footing is required. There are so many rocks, so many roots, so many streams to cross where you have to step or leap from one rock to the other. A lot of the trail was wet and soggy, and we went on this trail last year during the summer when it was fairly dry, and there were still parts of the trail that were wet and soggy.
Yeah, I don't feel like we've had a lot of rain recently that it would have been that wet and soggy yesterday.
Not so much. Not so much rain, I don't think. I want to start out by telling our listeners this trail is a beautiful trail.
Yes.
It's a gorgeous trail. It is something that we would recommend you do at least once, just for no other reason than to see Rainbow Falls, which is a beautiful falls. It's very tall.
I'm gonna qualify that with do at least once if it is a beautiful waterfall. If you're truly an unfit hiker, like, I don't know if I'd even recommend doing this once.
It's
do the first mile and a half in and out.
Tough. Yeah. Yeah, it's very tough. So it was busy yesterday. We went on a Saturday. And so here's a note about Jones Gap State Park. On the weekends, and including Fridays, you should make a reservation. You have to make a reservation.
Get a parking spot, to get into the park.
Yeah, they won't let you in unless you have a reservation on the weekends.
And you can't, it's not like you can park on the side of the road and get into the park from another trail.
Nope,
you can't
do that. There is no place to park
on the side of the road. Yeah, if you don't make that reservation, we actually wanted to go 2 weeks ago, was it?
Yeah, two weeks ago.
We didn't make a reservation.
We figured it was early enough in the year, and we got there first thing, and they were like, nope, it's already started. You need a reservation.
Yep.
So if you go there, you can make a reservation online. It's $5. I think it was $5.30 with taxes. So it's not expensive, but you will be turned away if you don't have a reservation on the weekend.
Right. And you do. Okay, so we have the South Carolina State Park Pass. You still need to make that reservation, even if you've paid for the pass. You still need to pay that $5.
That's right. So now, if you go during the week, Monday through Thursday, you don't need a reservation if you have a state park pass. But definitely on the weekends, you won't be able to get in. And we should also say, even if you don't do the hike, Jones Gap State Park is one of the most beautiful parks in upstate South Carolina, probably in the region. It's simply gorgeous.
Right. Yes. And you said it was busy yesterday, and it was. But another qualifier is there's not that many parking spots. So even when it is at peak busy, there's not a ton of people there. Because there's only what? How many parking spaces are there?
Maybe 40.
Yeah.
Maybe 40. And that might be generous. Next time we'll probably count, but it's,
I'm sure
it's two small parking areas.
One's handicapped and one is.
Well, there's three. There's the handicapped spot and then two small parking areas.
Okay.
But
there's not.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of spaces.
Right. Which, again, comes back to why you need the reservation.
Right.
But it's also kind of nice to know that even if the park is full up, it's not going to be super crowded with people.
No. And when we were doing our hike, we ran into a number of other hikers, a lot of them. I would guess everybody that goes to the park is there for hiking, or at least the majority of people are there for hiking. They have a really nice park store there.
And it's just beautiful. The
park is amazing. There's picnic tables right there near the parking area.
There's a fish hatchery. A
fish hatchery that has some rainbow trout in it. There's the stream. And I hesitate to call it a stream because it's pretty big.
Yeah.
It might even be a river that runs right through the park. And there's tons of cascades and waterfalls. And the stream is moving fast. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. But as far as the hike is concerned, when we were doing the hike, a lot of it made me feel pretty good because almost everybody that we ran into also had to stop and catch their breath.
Yes.
Along the way.
Yeah. So even fit hikers are stopping and catching their breath on this
one.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. We did see one younger couple that was running it.
Mm.
Hey, more power to them.
Right. They're the aliens from the other planet. I don't know.
Man, this is brutal. So here are some of the highlights that we had for it. Some of the parts of the trail are 20 degree grade inclines or higher. And it's not like going 20 degree grades in a paved area. You're going 20 degree grades across boulders, across rocks, across roots. This is an exceptionally challenging trail to do.
Yeah, that's why my legs hurt today.
We're very sore. Well, I don't know about you, but I woke up extremely sore today. And I made sure I took magnesium when I went to bed last night so I wouldn't cramp up too bad. But my body is definitely feeling it. This is without question, if you're an unfit hiker, pain bringer trail.
Yeah. I fell trying to get up. I want to call it a step, but
yeah, I mean this step that you had to get up along the trail was easily 18 inches tall. And so you have to step up and try to use your leg power to get up. And yeah, you
which I usually can.
I
usually can mountain goat things, but yeah. This, I just couldn't, and I came down on my knee. Thankfully, it wasn't too bad. Yeah, that, it was eye-opening, the difficulty.
The difficulty is tough. We did this one before. You were heavier at the time.
Yes, I remember. And that's why I thought doing it now, after we've been doing this podcast, we've been hiking regularly, I thought, well, surely it wasn't as difficult as I remembered. I was 35 pounds heavier in the summer. And
we have 100 more miles of trails on our
exactly.
legs now.
And
we thought it would be easier. And if we look purely at the numbers, when I recorded our hike last year, we did do it about 25 minutes faster. This time was faster.
Yeah. I don't think the pain in my body is any different.
Man, it's so brutal. So there are so many steps, rock steps, wooden steps, dirt steps. There's too many to count. Normally when we encounter steps, we'll give you the mile in as to when the steps are and a rough approximation of how many. We would spend the next hour of this podcast just telling you about the location.
Somebody
of the steps.
Has probably already got them on online somewhere.
Probably. I don't know. It's too many. Just if you have trouble walking up a lot of steps that are uneven, some very steep, like the one Donna took a neon, this is absolutely not the trail for you. And interestingly enough, the very first part of the trail, which is the easiest part, is very challenging in itself because there are so many rocks and roots and There's little streams that you have to cross. I mean, this is just the first part. When you start walking, yes, right along the stream, there are several rocks that you have to step over that are being covered by water and moss. So you have to really be careful out there, guys.
True. But if you're an unfit hiker and you want to try this, or you want to just visit Jones Gap State Park, I think it's pretty safe to say go a mile in.
Yeah.
And then turn around and come that mile back out.
When I say easiest, it's not like a stroll around the neighborhood. It is very challenging, but it is.
But the elevation isn't there. It's really, really wide.
It's wide. It's a much more gentle elevation gain. You're still going up, but it's a much more gentle elevation gain than it is in the
later. Right.
The second two thirds of the trail. And what I find really neat about this particular trail and Jones Gap State Park is you can reserve campsites, primitive camping sites, right there along the river where the water is just rushing past you. And that's something that you and I are definitely going to want to do at some point. You can reserve a campsite literally a foot away from this rushing, crystal clear, cold water stream/river.
Yeah.
And just have a wonderful time. It's definitely something I want to reserve a campsite for.
Mm-hmm.
The only issue is there's not a lot of privacy because you can see the campsites from the trail.
Right.
So just keep that in mind if you're doing it. Scout it out ahead of time, guys. But even so, if you just face your tent toward the stream, there's nothing on the other side. So you'll have some privacy there.
Mm-hmm. And the trails close at 6:30 p.m. So I guess if you're camping there, you're going to get privacy after 6:30.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, we did encounter two very interesting wildlife things on this trail. The first one was something that I was really surprised to see. I pointed it out to you and you couldn't see it at first.
Well, yeah, because I'm so busy at this time of year looking around at the flowers, the wildflowers, and the trees are getting their leaves, and I'm looking at the vegetation, the plant life. I'm looking at all of that. And it was one of the moments where I was sitting on a rock, a big rock, and I was catching my breath. And I think this thing was within 4 feet of us.
Yeah, it was very, very close. So I saw it crossing the path. It crossed the trail. It was this really big black king snake moving very, very slowly. Like, I did not think snakes moved that slowly when there were people around. But man, this thing moved like 2-3 inches a minute, maybe. It was just very slowly moving along, and he was 4 foot long. He was a big king snake.
Yeah. So I mean, he
didn't bother us.
Yeah, he wasn't interested in us. Nope. And we were interested in him, of course, but
yeah, he crossed the street and then got up into a branch of a bush and just chilled there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was neat. It's the first time we had seen some smaller snakes on trails before throughout the region, but that was the first time we had seen a big one.
This size, yeah.
And then on the way back, we saw this gorgeous, giant Luna moth.
Mm-hmm.
It's this neon green and yellow moth.
I thought it was a big leaf on something at first because the wings, they're green. And that neon green, I'm seeing it on leaves as, you know, the trees are getting their fresh new leaves. I'm seeing that color. But then I realized, oh, that's not a leaf there.
Yeah, we got pretty close to it and it didn't move. It was huge. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a moth that big.
Probably the size of the palm of my hand.
Easily the size of the palm of your hand. Yeah, it was huge and it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just beautiful.
So we got some pictures. We'll put them on the website.
Okay. Yeah, I already posted the pictures, but I'll add the moth one up there for everybody to see. It was beautiful. It really was beautiful.
We had to look it up. I didn't know a Luna moth was a thing.
Neither did I, but apparently it's pretty popular up here. They don't normally get that big. So that guy was special, or lady was special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Matriarch or patriarch of the Luna moths.
I would think so. That thing was huge.
Yeah.
Another thing to note, there are no benches along this trail at all. From the time that you leave the parking area there at the park store / ranger station to all the way to Rainbow Falls, there's not a single bench, but there
are plenty of boulders,
tons of boulders and down trees to sit on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And make use of them listeners, because you're gonna need them. If you're unfit, if you're listening to this and you're an unfit hiker like we are,
and you're gonna try this,
yeah, you're gonna need them. And so normally on these trails, I don't sit down, mostly because I just don't want my muscles to start tightening up. So I usually stand up and keep moving when we stop for a break. There were several times in this one I had to sit down.
Yeah.
Because it was difficult.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, too, that I don't know how the men's bathroom was, but the women's bathroom, when you go in, if you go to the right, there's showers in there. And I'm guessing that's for the primitive campers.
Oh, for the camp. That's nice.
And then if you go to the left, that's where the restroom stalls are. I don't know if you primitive camp. I don't know if that is left unlocked overnight. I'm not sure.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I would hope so. I didn't use the restrooms this time. I did the last year, and there were showers in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Yeah. It might be nice if after this hike, I mean, you and I were so beat, but if you planned on trying to go anywhere, I wonder if you could just hike and then use the shower and change before leaving the park.
I don't see why not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see why not. So it was interesting yesterday because when we were doing the hike, it was about 60 degrees when we were actually doing it. And of course, you know, since it took us 4 hours, the temperature went up significantly. I was sweating.
Yeah.
Pretty hard. And that's the first time I've been sweating on a trail in, since last summer, since it was warm. And man, it's a brutal hike. The hardest part for me on these steep inclines and this lot of elevation is coming down because
the knees.
I had knee reconstruction surgery, gosh, 20 years ago now, 25 years ago. And going down inclines is harder for me than going up inclines because it puts all that pressure on the knee joint.
Mm-hmm.
And the balls of my feet started really barking at me toward the end of the trail because the way down,
it's a controlled fall.
It is a controlled fall.
And
there are some parts closer toward the top. There are carved steps. I'm not going to call them stone steps because it's the actual boulder that they have carved into steps in several spots.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one spot that's very narrow. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How wide do you think that was?
Not wide enough for me to be comfortable with it.
Yeah. So maybe 18 inches max wide.
Something like that.
Some of them were straight very, up on, very narrow.
Straight up on one side and straight down on the other. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's some very, very narrow parts. And there's parts where you have to squeeze through rocks. We'll say this again, and I'm sure we're beating the dead horse here, but if you're not sure-footed, don't even try this trail.
Pretty early on, I said, I can't imagine someone bringing kids or a dog on this hike, but we did see dogs.
We saw several dogs and one child.
Yes.
Well, I guess two. It was a couple that had two kids. And they were both 10-ish,
right,
somewhere around there, maybe 10 to 12. And they seemed to be doing okay, but this wasn't all the way up. So I don't know. I don't know if they went all the way up or not. I would guess.
I would be so worried.
I would too.
But again, that first mile and a half, 100% bring your dogs, bring your kids, go in a mile and a half and come back out.
Yeah. So the part she's talking about a mile and a half in, you will follow the stream for the first mile and a half. And then it's going to take a hard right turn and go up into the mountain. And that's when the real hard climb starts. It's a consistent steady up climb from the beginning, but the real hard climb starts there. So if you want to do this trail just part of the way and not get all the way to Rainbow Falls,
and I would say it's worth it for the beauty, for the water.
Yeah, because there is a small waterfall.
Yes,
right there, right before you leave the path of the stream. And by small, I mean it's probably 25 feet. It's a decent waterfall. But up until that point, you're following the stream almost the entire way. It really is quite beautiful. And then it takes that hard right to go up the mountain. It's very tough.
That's where the crazy people go.
That was us yesterday. Tell them your impressions of Rainbow Falls itself. So we have not yet discussed the fall itself.
So there are other waterfalls that I like better. We should make a list of our favorite waterfalls. For the difficulty in getting there, the risk reward ratio is not there for me. It's not enough. It's beautiful, and I'm glad I've seen it once. I'm glad I've seen it once to be able to form this opinion. But it's a skinny, really, really tall waterfall.
Yeah, it's very tall, over 100 feet. It is very narrow. It doesn't cascade down rocks. It just falls
right
straight down into the pool below.
And I was sitting there, I was a little grumpy when we got there, and I had seen it before, but I think when we were there over the summer, for whatever reason, I saw rainbows in the Rainbow Falls. Yesterday, I didn't see rainbows there, which I feel like I got gypped.
Might have been the sun.
Yeah,
you know, the time of the day.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a clear day yesterday, but yeah, I didn't see any rainbows. And the falls themselves are beautiful, but for the effort.
For the effort.
I don't think it's worth it. And especially the end part, if you want to get close to the waterfall, you have to mountain goat over boulders.
And again,
across the stream.
Yeah, across water.
And these rocks are underwater, so you're stepping on, you don't know if they're super slick or if they're sturdy or anything. So I can't stress this enough. If there are any questions about your sure-footedness, do not attempt this hike. Because the last thing we want is for anybody to get hurt, like somebody who shall remain nameless that's talking right now, that got hurt on a hike because I was being dumb.
Well,
but I don't want anybody to get hurt on this. So unless you're 100% positive about your sure-footedness, don't do it. What about hiking poles? Do you think we needed them?
Holy cow, yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Without question.
This is actually the first hike that I remembered enough about this hike that it's like, this is a two hiking pole for most of the way kind of hike for me. Up to now, I really have gotten away with just using one hiking pole.
Yeah. I brought two, only used one, but on the way down, I was considering getting both of them, and I probably should have, just to take some of the pressure off. Going down, so when you think about going up steps, you usually get a little bit more leverage going up steps, and the chance of falling is less than going down these very steep steps. Because when you're going down these steep steps, like these 18-inch drops that you have to make in a couple spots, a lot of them are 12 inches down. You really have to be careful. Since the whole thing is a decline, the wrong step will start you tumbling down. The whole thing. It's extremely challenging. By far the toughest one.
Mm-hmm.
One tip that I will make sure to let you guys know is make sure you bring plenty of water.
Right.
Plenty of water. There are streams at the beginning, and I used my brand new handy dandy water filtration bottles that we talked about in the last podcast. And I filled them up at the bottom. I filled them up halfway.
Mm-hmm.
I filled them up at the top. I filled them up on the way back down in two spots. So my water bottles got plenty of usage yesterday.
Yes.
And how much did you drink?
I bring my water bottle. I like to drink alkaline water. I have never done a hike where they're pretty big. I should go check and see like the ounces on them. They're bigger
than
a
full liter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably should have had more. I know I drank more than a liter.
Well, I had my water, and then every time you filled up your filtered water bottles, you were
true.
Like, here, Donna, taste this. It tastes so great. And so I would taste from your filtered water bottles. So I did drink more than
yeah.
Later. I'm just letting you fill them up and carry them.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about those is that you don't, if you know that you're going to be hiking along water that is cold, fast moving. Yes. And you can fill up these filtered water bottles, then you don't have to carry the weight of water all the time.
Right. I've actually stopped carrying the water bladder that I have and the siphon tube. I just carry my new bottles, because I know almost every single place that we go to here in the upstate will have a water source.
It's so, it really is. The water is, it tastes
so amazing tasting.
And it's so cold.
Yeah.
On a hot day, it's somehow still cold, and that's just magical to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty great. There are several spots where you could step into the stream in the water. Get your feet wet in the summer if you want to cool down. There's plenty of spots, mostly early on,
mm-hmm.
Where you can get cool. But Overall, Donna, besides the difficulty rating, what are your overall impressions of the trail and the waterfall as a whole?
I would do that first mile and a half again, over and over again. Go in about a mile and a half and turn right around and come right back out. I'd play in the stream. I'd sit by the water. I would camp there. I mean, Jones Gap State Park is just beautiful. And everybody should go there at least once in their life, I think.
I think so. Yeah. My impressions are very similar. Rainbow Falls is nice to see once.
But
the effort is just, in my opinion, the effort expended to see the waterfalls is just not worth it.
Right. I'll say this too. That day that we got turned away because we hadn't made reservations, Jones Gap State Park is really close to how many other
states? Several. Parks? Caesar's Head is like 3 minutes, 5 minutes down the road.
Right.
Well, not 5 minutes.
I think everything's
15 minutes, but
right.
But it's right next to it. I think Jones Gap and Caesar's Head actually touch.
Yes. The Mountain Wilderness area, mm-hmm. I believe,
yeah.
Covers just a lot. And then Table Rock.
Table Rock's,
I believe,
not far beyond that. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's.
This is a gorgeous part of the country,
mm-hmm.
right here. And definitely, in my opinion, the most beautiful part of the state.
I would agree with that.
Okay, so to wrap up here, Painbringer.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely. Waterfall's nice, but man, is it a tough slog getting up there.
I did everything right. I drank my coffee. I had my eggs and bacon. I had snacks along the way. And I still got to the top there, saw Rainbow Falls, and was like, meh.
yeah, no, I hear you.
I should have been in a better mood. I don't know why I wasn't. Probably because I was hurting so bad.
Yeah, no kidding. So we're going to talk about where we ate for breakfast.
Yes, the eggs and bacon.
In our review section of F-Mart. It's an unassuming name for an unassuming restaurant that gives you really good food at an amazingly low price. We're going to talk about that after Donna's fun fact, which is coming up now.
So today's fun fact is all about Solomon Jones, the guy who Jones Gap State Park was named after.
All right.
So Solomon Jones was born on March 7th, 1802. His obituary says he was born near the headwaters of Mud Creek, 6 miles south of the present-day Hendersonville, North Carolina, but he was actually born in the Hungry Creek area of eastern Henderson County, North Carolina, both pretty close together. I don't know why his obituary said that he was born not where he was born, but
who knows? Yeah,
who knows? Anyway, he was the son of Thomas Jones and Lucinda Hicks, and they were from Buncombe, Henderson County, North Carolina.
Okay.
When he was 20 years old, on 11/20/1822, he married Mary Hamilton, born January 16, 1807. Not much age difference there, only 5 years. But if he was 20, she was 15, which I guess I guess that was kind of normal back then.
I mean, this is what, mid-1800s, you said?
Not even mid-1822.
Okay.
It's still kind of gross
that she's 15. I mean, it was more common back then, certainly, than it is now.
Yeah.
But.
I remember being 15 years old and thinking that I was an adult. So I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, but
you get to that
kids
point.
Kids are stupid. I was dumb as a box of rocks until I was 40. So.
Okay. So her brother was a well-known leader of the Union soldiers of Henderson County during the Civil War. Her brother's name was Colonel Joseph Hamilton.
Well, so that's. So wait a minute. So. The Union soldiers of North Carolina.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And so this is the woman that, you know.
I wouldn't think there'd be any Union soldiers in North Carolina.
I mean, Tennessee's called the Volunteer State because it had the most volunteers, but they volunteered on both sides.
Yeah.
This is where the line was, you know. This is where, like, one brother went north and one brother went south.
Yeah, I guess. I figured it would be a little further north, like Virginia, Maryland area would be one. Okay.
No, that's, anyway. I thought that was a, you know, pretty interesting tidbit of information.
Yeah.
So Solomon belonged to a group called the Commissioners of Public Health and Public Building in Henderson County in 1841.
Okay.
So he was, you know, interested in making occupied areas better.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, you know, leads right into the fact that he was, when he died, he was called the road builder.
The road builder.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Solomon bought a mountain peak near the present town of Laurel Park and named his mountain Hebron because it was almost identical in height to the biblical Mount Hebron, which was 3,000 feet. He built a mansion and farmed that land. On the hottest days, the spring at the house had almost ice cold water.
Isn't that great?
It's so wonderful.
Man. Isn't that great?
This is just such a magical place.
It is. Yeah. So liquid hot in the summer, 90 degrees plus, probably closer to 100 on some days. And he's got this
ice cold
40 degree bubbling spring. Oh, man.
And the land, the dirt up there is just really rich soil. And he grew peaches and other fruit. And
nice.
It said in what I was reading, it said dispensed to all who desired them. So I don't know if that means that they gave them away or if they, I know that later on they sold produce and stuff, but dispensed to all to, who desired. I mean, he just grew fruit, you know, fruit trees. He had peaches and whatnot.
And, right. And gave them to people.
Which, I mean, he is a very well-liked character in history.
So far.
Yeah.
So far, at least. I mean, I hope it stays that way. But, you know, these things typically,
well, maybe not
these things typically by, don't stay that way.
You can't be liked by everybody, right?
No, I mean, that's fair.
So.
That's fair. So far, his family was Union supporters. He
right side of history, right?
Yep. So, yep. So put that checkbox there. And then he
grew peach trees and grew
fruit and food and
dispensed to all who desired them. I'm not
sounding like he's giving food away to people who need it. And maybe that's not the case.
But he
like
was well liked. He was.
Okay. So he's checking the boxes as a good guy so far.
Mm-hmm. The house that he built up there on Mount Hebron is still in use today.
Is it really?
That would be so interesting.
No kidding.
Yeah. So he and his wife had 2 sons and 10 daughters.
What? 12 kids.
I know.
She was pregnant all the time.
Seriously. And you know, back then you could die in childbirth. It was just really tempting fate that I get. I don't know.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. It's really on top of a mountain. And 12 kids. Holy nuts.
Three of the daughters married into this one family called the McCrarys, this family that lived nearby. So that's kind of neat because, like, all those kids growing up. I mean, can you imagine 3 girls marrying 3 sons from this family? And then can you imagine the get togethers, the cousins, and all that? I mean, all the families.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically just one giant family.
Not a whole lot of conflict about where you go for the holidays, I guess.
Or, yeah.
I want to be with my sister. Okay. Well,
okay. Yeah. Well, that's going to happen.
Yep. So Solomon Jones was known as the road builder. He constructed a road, the Jones Gap Turnpike, which was a toll road connecting Transylvania County, North Carolina, and Greenville, South Carolina. That was pretty important. That was a big important road.
Oh, sure. Major trade route, I'm sure, at the very least. Yeah.
The road was completed in the 1840s, and it was the only direct route between these two places.
Wow.
So Solomon Jones, he didn't have any formal engineering training at all. That's what is one of the things that's so impressive about him.
He just figured it out.
Yeah. According to legend, he blazed the trail with a hatchet while following the lead or leash of a sow. So he followed a big pig, and had a hatchet and just was cutting the road. I don't know how you get that. I don't know how that legend gets born. That's it.
It's an oddly specific legend.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, did it really happen? Maybe.
There's got to be some truth in it. It's not like he said, oh, he followed deer trails.
Nope.
No, he's following a big old fat pig.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that you don't just put like a collar on a pig and have a leash. I think it's probably like a harness or something. But still.
Or probably back then it was just a rope.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
I hope the pig was comfortable, though, whatever it was.
How do you know that the pig, like, so he thought the pig was finding the best possible route, but how was the pig? I would be thinking, oh, this pig's just trying to get away from me.
Oh, maybe. But even if the pig is just trying to get away from you, he's still choosing the easiest route to get away from you.
That's fair. That's fair.
But here's the thing, too, is pigs are shorter than people. So he's going to be choosing a path that, you know, there might be branches and stuff.
Yeah. like overheads going into caves.
But anyway, that's the legend. So the turnpike that he built has been abandoned for the most part since 1910. But the trail we hiked yesterday, you hike along part of this road that he built.
There is a sign at the very beginning of the trail that, that says this is Solomon. This is Solomon's Road.
Even still, as we were hiking, all the rocks and everything, we were like, how in the world?
How are you getting wagons?
Right. Because we were talking about possibly primitive camping. And I was thinking, oh, we have a wagon, like a wagon that you pull as you walk along. Mm-hmm. Thinking, you know, you could put camping supplies in that tent, whatever, and pull that along. But even that, you would have to pick up and
in a lot of places just to get
it. Yeah. So I was thinking if we do go primitive camping there, let's choose one of the first sites.
Yeah, just one of the ones we can get to fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we're going to be backpacking that stuff in.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how you said we are going to be backpacking that
stuff. So I'm going to be backpacking that stuff in.
I'll be backpacking some stuff.
Back to the Solomon's Road, he must have field dirted it in,
I guess,
or maybe some of the dirt since the 1800s has washed away
for sure. I'm guessing
it's just leaving the natural trail now, but yeah, there's tons of rocks there.
So it was a toll road, so he was maintaining it, he was making sure that it stayed, you know, usable back then, so that was worth something, because you know, it was a used road and people would pay the toll. And there's a reason for that, right?
Do you know what the toll prices were?
We were talking about that a little bit. I think you looked it up and it was like...
There's a sign. One of the signs on the trail has the toll sheet on what it charges. And so if you're just walking it, it's 5 cents.
Okay.
If you have a wagon with 6 horses, oxen, or mules, it's $1 toll. Now, $1 in the 1850s was not a small amount.
That was not a small amount. Yeah. That was, it's like an 18-wheeler has to pay a higher toll. Because
that's what it's like.
Because there's a heavier weight. It's going to be more damaging to the road. There's going to be more repairs that need to be done.
Yeah. But yeah, the sign there has that little price sheet from back then.
Okay. I didn't see that. That is neat. Did you take a picture of it?
I think so.
Okay. I must have been grumpy and hurting at that moment. I just remember you talking about it.
We just started the hike.
Oh,
couldn't
have
been too grumpy.
No. If we just started the hike, then I was looking around at how beautiful it is.
Yeah,
so that's what distracted me. Yeah. It was a happy distraction. Okay. So the very first road that Solomon built was from his mountain home, Mount Hebron, down to Hendersonville. It took him 7 years to complete the road. It's not always easy building roads. Sometimes you have things that get in your way. Sometimes it's your neighbor.
Oh, yeah. I like where this is going.
Yep. He had to litigate with his Scottish neighbor.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Yep.
Move your road.
After the road had been constructed for quite a ways, his Scottish neighbor decided that he didn't want so many of his quote unquote splendid trees.
That's right, my splendid trees.
To be cut. And he refused to let Solomon continue through his property. So
this road is almost built.
Yeah.
And his Scottish neighbors is like, move your arse. That's my tree.
I just kind of wonder, I don't know, the way that the article was that I read, it made it sound like maybe either the Scotsman was in agreement for the road to come through and then changed his mind, or Solomon was just like, oh, he'll be fine with it. It'll be fine. Let me just go. You know, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission something like that.
And it doesn't say?
It doesn't say.
You know, it's possible. Scottish man's wife was like, I love that tree. Make sure you keep it.
It wasn't that tree. It was those trees. It was a lot of trees. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the husband's just like, all right, fine.
Yep.
I'll tell him no.
Yep. One discussion of the work, Solomon was saying, there are only 2 stones that need to be blasted out along the route. He was justifying, you know, he was litigating. Oh, yeah. There's only 2 stones. Like, we're so close. And the Scottishman that was there at that meeting, I guess, he said, 3. The 2 on the road and me.
That's so great. That is a very Scottish thing to say. Nope, that's 3 stones.
3 immovable. You're going to have to blast me away too. There's no way I'm moving.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. So I loved that story. I'm sure that there's more to that story. I don't know if anybody out there.
Do you know what the resolution was? I mean, clearly, did the road get built?
Yes.
So yeah. Eventually, he's like, fine.
Yeah. 7 years to make that road. Wow. But
probably the road took 2 years and the rest of the 5 years was him fighting with the Scots.
Oh, my goodness. Guy. That, I mean, some heels were dug in, right?
Yeah. I wonder how great those trees were.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
what if there are some spindly old craggy oaks?
So we know that Solomon Jones was growing like delicious peaches and stuff like that. So what if these trees were fruit producing, or like what if they produced the most, you know, what if there was some kind of neighborly, like Solomon Jones thinks that he has the best tasting peach tree on the land, and his neighbor's like, no, you're wrong. My peach trees are the best. And what if, I don't know, there's so many.
So you're thinking maybe this road was just a ruse to get rid of the Scots guy's amazing peach trees.
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
It was probably some beautiful flowering tree, like a, you know, rhododendron.
It could have been. I can't imagine that it was like privacy kind of thing, because
land was huge, so yeah, probably not. And I mean, also possible the Scots guy just didn't want a road going through his property,
right? Yeah, we don't know how close that road would go to his house, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, so Solomon Jones is also credited with Cashier's Valley Road in Transylvania County. It's now part of U.S. Route 64.
Which we take when we go through Cashers.
Yeah. Ugh, I love Cashers.
Yeah.
It's such a great place. And then he also built the Flat Rock Turnpike in Henderson County and the Green River Turnpike in Henderson County. And I believe there's more roads. I mean, there's a reason that he was called the road builder. It wasn't just, you know.
I mean, that's enough, though.
Yeah.
That's some significant one.
Oh, yeah. He had a vision. Yeah. His gravestone says, a true patriot. He labored 50 years to leave the world better than he found it. So Solomon and his wife, Mary, also lived on their Salem plantation in Greenville County, South Carolina. Mary, his first wife, she died in May of 1881 at the age of 74.
Oh, that's a long life.
Yeah. Especially having, what?
12 kids. 12,
yeah. Solomon was 79 because he's 5 years older than her. She was 74 when she died. And she's buried in the Old Salem Cemetery in Greenville County. After his first wife died, Solomon returned to live on Mount Hebron to live out his days. So he was 79 when Mary died. And at the age of 80, Solomon decides to get married again.
What?
At the age of 80.
At 80?
Yeah.
Oh, man, just call it a day, buddy.
I mean, I don't know. Kudos to him. He's not done living, I guess.
I guess.
So Solomon marries his second wife, Asena Tantaline Louise Jimison.
That's a name.
It is a name. Asena, A-S-S-E-N-A. Asena, I think that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, she was born on March 2nd, 1844. So she was 42 years younger than him. I'm guessing he had kids older than her.
So she's 38 when they... Yeah, he would have, because...
Yeah.
His first one would have been born when he was around 20, 21, 22 at the earliest.
Yeah.
So they would have been.
I always think that's a little
odd. They would
have
been in their late 50s, 60s.
Yeah. So, I wonder if they were like, Dad, what are you doing?
What are you doing? She's younger than your youngest kid.
But anyway, I mean, maybe it was love. I don't know if I believe that or not. No. So Solomon Jones lived to be 97 years old. And his.
Now, wow.
Yeah. He commissioned his gravestone, I read, 5 years before he died, 10 or 12 years before he died. He commissioned his gravestone plenty before he died.
Yeah.
Because he died on April 23, 1899. Asena lived at the Mount Hebron place for several years after Solomon died. She collected the tolls from Solomon's toll roads and sold produce and dairy from, you know, the products that she sold stuff down in Hendersonville. In her later days, she went to live with a niece, Etta Livingston King, in the Hooper's Creek section of Henderson County. So Asena dies on September 8th, 1928. She was 84 years old.
The whole thing about, they didn't live past 60 back then. This story is blowing that out of the water.
Right. Well, I do kind of wonder. Sometimes I wonder, like, you know, that whole blue regions diet or something, like if you eat really healthy food, fresh food, not, you know, the, I don't know, they probably had really good access to really good quality food.
Good quality food, water and air.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even still.
But still, that's a hard life. Living in the mountains back in the 1800s was not an easy life.
Right.
Bears, mountain lions.
I'm elk. Amazed that Solomon Jones built his mansion on top of Mount Hebron before he built the road from Mount Hebron down to Hendersonville, before he had that issue with the Scottish neighbor. But how do you build a mansion up there? He's hiking
that stuff. Well, I would think that you're cutting trees up there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you're not hauling that stuff up, but you're still hauling a ton of stuff up.
I mean,
stoves
and
furniture. Yeah.
I mean, going to buy a new couch or whatever. I don't know.
Doesn't happen. They're like, no, we're going to sit on this until it falls apart.
So, yeah. So, Asena, she goes to live with her niece. And then she dies on September 8th, 1928, 84 years old. She requested not to be buried on Hebron Mountain beside her husband. So, she was laid to rest in the Jemison family cemetery near the graves of her parents.
What's the story with that?
I know. Neither one of his wives ended up, like, he's buried up there, Mount Hebron. His first wife is buried in Salem,
South Carolina,
and his second wife is buried near her parents. So
what's up with that?
I don't know. I feel like there's
something. There's a story there.
Maybe if you're so well liked and considered to be the road builder, you've done all this work that you've thrown yourself into, and people like you because you're giving peaches away or whatever. Maybe something falls by the wayside with your. I mean, they stuck with him. Two women stuck with him, one until she died and the other one until he died.
True, but divorces were not very common back then either.
Yeah.
So.
I don't
know. Yeah, but there's a story there.
I feel like
both of his wives weren't buried.
She's like, yeah, no, I'm good. Just, no.
I spent long enough next to him. It's time for me to be somewhere else.
I don't know. I mean, and he had commissioned his gravestone so much longer before he died. I wonder if there was ever any conversation about, hey, let's go ahead and commission your gravestone too. You can be buried right next to me. Won't that be fun? Well, I don't know if that would be the call.
Won't that be fun? It'll be funsies.
We'll be together forever.
Yeah, I don't, I who knows?
I don't know.
But I mean, I don't find it weird that a man that old back then would commission his own gravestone.
No, that was thinking ahead for sure. Yeah. And also she was, what did I say, 42 years younger than him.
So he was 38 when they got married. She was 38 when they got married.
Okay.
And he was 80.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really isn't time for her to be thinking about her headstone probably when he dies, you know?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, hopefully not. Ideally, I mean, yeah. No, she had plenty of life in her.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's great. So they named Jones Gap State Park
after
Jones Gap, which is the valley there where the road is built through.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the road, the original road that Solomon Jones built, is you can walk it today. And we did yesterday.
Yes. And that I think that's the wider beginning part, the part that I'm saying, you know, walk a mile in, maybe a mile and a half in, and turn around and walk out. That'll be enough. That would be enough adventure for an unfit hiker, I believe.
I agree. And, you know, it actually makes a heck of a lot of sense to build a road right along that river stream because you have access to water, right?
Yeah.
Traveling by wagon from Asheville to Greenville back in the day would probably have taken a full day, if not longer. So you want to make sure you have water thereby so you don't have to transport it. So, wow, that's a great fun fact, Donna.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So Solomon Jones and his Scottish neighbor.
Yes.
He's fighting him the whole way.
I wonder if the Scottish neighbor, like, what's his story? Like, what was he at Solomon Jones's funeral or, you know, like.
Probably not. Probably not.
The newspaper clipping said his funeral was well attended, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Hopefully they made up and
I hope so. Well, thanks again, Donna. So now let's tell everybody about that cute little restaurant, F Mart.
Yeah.
So today's local business that we're talking about is called F Mart. And it's a weird name for this particular business because there's not a lot of store there. There's a small rack of snacks.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really about it. That's a store consumable type item.
Right. No, but there were these little refrigerator sections that had like Gatorade and stuff like that.
They did have drinks and stuff.
But you
kind of
have to walk past tables where people are eating breakfast or whatever.
Right. So
to get to that.
A little bit about this place. It's at the intersection of Gear Highway and River Falls Road. So it's right there at the intersection of the road that you have to take to get to Jones Gap State Park. The address is 4268 Gear Highway, that's G-E-E-R Highway, Marietta, South Carolina. Now, this restaurant, Donna, it's small.
Mm-hmm.
It only has 7 tables total.
Yeah.
Most of them are 2-person tables.
There was a little bit of a bar area where you could, like, sit around the corner from...
Okay.
Yeah. But,
it's
yeah.
It's a small kitchen. There's 3 ladies. Both times we've been in there, it's been 3 ladies,
mm-hmm.
the same 3,
yeah.
that are there cooking breakfast and lunch. And it is a very, very Southern folksy feeling.
Very,
place.
Very Southern. I mean, you get the impression that there's like a lot of regulars, and I feel like it's kind of a hangout for old country men, you know.
When we went in yesterday, it was all old country men there.
Not all old country. And like, there was also some that were probably in their 40s or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and the first time we went,
they were all clearly locals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very clear. Everybody knows everybody's first
yep.
name. In fact, the first time that we went there, one of the ladies that was working asked one of the patrons to help her get a big, heavy thing
of tea.
Of tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was hilarious to me. The guy's sitting there eating his breakfast, and she's like, "Hey, Bill, go get that tea out the back." And he stands up and goes and gets the tea.
No, did you hear what he said, though? He said, "You picked the weakest man in the room."
That's so great. Yeah. And the 3 ladies there could not be nicer.
Oh my gosh. It's so
warm and welcoming of a place. And, you know, Donna and I clearly don't live in that area. So nobody gave us the side eye. She was as warm as could be.
Mm-hmm.
And the
welcoming.
Food there, it's traditional breakfast, right?
Right.
Eggs and bacon and pancakes and grits and biscuits and all that stuff. But man,
the prices
are like the prices from the 1980s.
Yeah.
They're so good. We both had a full breakfast and it cost $12.
Right. Well, and you got
oh yeah, and I got
a sweet potato cake. Yeah.
Yeah. Just for it was a wrapped thing that you bought off the little convenience store area, but
mm-hmm.
I had never had one. I wanted to try a little bit of it. I never finished the whole thing. But yeah, and that was included in the $12.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, and the eggs, I swear they taste like they're farm fresh, free range maybe, or something. I'm not sure. Those eggs are so good.
They taste very fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. And they cook everything to order. There's mm-hmm. nothing pre-cooked. And these 3 ladies are just buzzing around that small. It's a very small kitchen. It's
mm-hmm.
it's smaller than our kitchen, and they make the most out of it. They do a really nice job there.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the feeling they care a lot about customer service and about everybody feeling welcome. And I just love being places like that.
I do too. And places like that are the reason that we started doing these segments
mm-hmm.
about it. And we had been to Jones Gap a few times before, and we had not stopped there before a couple weeks ago because it looks like...
It doesn't look... From the outside, it doesn't look like it's going to be a great experience
as far as food. It's very... Very old signage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say run down because it absolutely isn't. They keep it up very well. But it looked like an old convenience store from the outside. And it does have signs that say best hot dogs in town and mm-hmm. and breakfast and lunch. We have not eaten lunch there, but the reviews on Yelp and Facebook say that their hot dogs are the best in town. So I'm not going to deny that. Their breakfast is very, very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And it's a place that you can easily pass without thinking twice about it.
Right.
But you shouldn't. You should definitely stop there and get yourself a really good, very affordable breakfast. Like we don't go to McDonald's anymore, or really, we don't really do too much fast food at all.
Yeah.
There's no way we're getting out of a McDonald's with full breakfasts for both of us for $12.
Not even for one person.
Probably not. And so it's really good. And yeah, the people are chatting, the customers are chatting with the ladies behind the counter and they're joking back. And
yeah,
it's a very
folksy feel. Yeah. I got the impression that the patrons that were in there, they had just come from the Andy Griffith Show's barbershop. And then that's where they go for breakfast after they
100%. Yeah. That's the right call. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about it, but yes, that's exactly what it feels like. That's exactly what it feels like.
It's adorable. They're just sweet people.
Very, very nice people. Very kind. The food's great. They try their best. They're warm as can be. Mm. So you should definitely try it when you're going to Jones Gap, either on the way in to get some breakfast that you're going to undoubtedly work off on the hike.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, get yourself a hot dog or a burger on the way out. The website is facebook.com/thefmart. So T-H-E-F-M-A-R-T. That's their website. They don't have a
We asked why they're called the F Mart, and I can't remember the name, but the names of the previous owner started with F.
Started with F.
And that's why it's called the F Mart.
Yeah. Yeah, they could probably do better with the rebranding.
I mean, I guess
it's definitely more of a food place than it is a
mart.
Than it
right.
is more of a convenience store type yeah. place. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's a really neat experience. And honestly, I anticipate we'll stop there every single time we go to Jones Gap.
Oh, yeah. Just to hear that folksy kind of, like, there was this old man in there that was talking. He was sitting at one table and this other guy was sitting at another table. And clearly they just knew each other. I don't know if they knew each other from
living in this tiny little town.
Right.
Probably.
Or maybe coming to the F Mart for breakfast on Saturday morning yeah. or something. I don't know. But the old man was like, yeah, that ditch really needs cleaning out. And the man who was, I guess he was in his 40s or something. He's like,
he worked at the county.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's why he was talking about him.
All right. So, yeah. So that man was like, well, you know, Bill, maybe those people don't want their ditch cleaned out, you know? And he's like, oh, okay, but they need that ditch cleaned out.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was adorable.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great place. You know, be prepared to spend a few minutes there because it's definitely not fast food. They will prepare it to order. So
yeah,
you're not going to get pre-scrambled eggs or anything like that. They prepare it to order, and they go as fast as they can go, but it's a neat experience. So listeners, if you're in the Marietta, South Carolina area, and definitely if you're going to Jones Gap, stop there, say hi to the ladies. They're all very kind, very welcoming. The food is great and the prices can't be beat.
Yeah.
So, F Mart, Marietta, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So that's the episode this week, guys. Rainbow Falls Trail at Jones Gap State Park in upstate South Carolina. The trail itself is beautiful, but it is exceptionally challenging. Definitely a pain bringer trail. The waterfalls is nice, but as Donna and I both agreed, we don't think it's worth the difficulty.
The pain that
it.
We're in today.
Yeah. But Jones Gap State Park, even if you go there and don't take any trail at all, it's simply a spectacular park.
Right.
One of our favorites in the whole region.
Yeah. If it's a hot summer day and you just want to stick your feet in some water.
Or sit in the water. Yeah. You can put a chair in the stream because there's benches and picnic tables right along the stream in the park area, not along the trail, but in the park area that you could go and just enjoy the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the water. We also covered the F Mart, this cute little restaurant with a very down-home old Southern feel to it. And Donna's tremendous fun fact about Solomon Jones, who built the roads and had a scuffle with his neighbor.
Yeah. As one might when they have a Scottish neighbor.
When they have a Scottish neighbor.
Thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe to us in whatever podcast app you use and be sure to leave us a review. That's how our show grows. Feel free to check out our trail photos at casualclimbers.podbean.com. And if you have a question, comment, or just want to drop us a line, you can reach us at casualclimberspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you out on the trails.
Hey, Donna, I'm thinking about talking to our neighbor about taking out one of his trees in the backyard.
He's not
Scottish, so we should be okay.
That's just not a thing that people do, though, anymore.
But it's blocking my view of the sky.
No, it's really not.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
All you have to do is walk out from under the tree, which.
But that's like a lot of effort you're asking of me to see the sky. Anyway, I'm going to take him to court and tell him I'm just going to take his tree out.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
I think so.
I'll stay home that day.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to support me?
I'll support you from afar.
I don't like how this is going.
The silent partner.
See you out on the trails, everybody.